Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Red Friday in Kansas City. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon co-hosting and producing with me today. Cody off today, then he's back Monday. As I said, yesterday was our last full show as a whole group until, I think, January 2nd, holidays and everything like that. So happy holidays to everybody. This is my final show of the year, and then we'll be back at it. I think Drew also out a little bit next week as well.
You're out as well.
So you and I are both out next week. So we got a bunch of things planned today, though, for final show of the year. One, we've got Josh Briscoe stopping by at 11 o'clock. He's kind enough to join us from the beach, which I'll be honest, I give him a ton of credit because I would have been like, hey, man, I'm on the beach. Don't even. He said earlier in the week, no, man, I want to talk some Chiefs still. So Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor from Sports Illustrated, going to join us 1 hour from now. We'll get the lowdown from him on this Chiefs-Texans game and his perspective. Also, Jay Binkley. It's been a bit since we had Bink on the show. Go. He's going to call in around 12:30 today. We'll talk some college football. You know, I know you're amped up for later on tonight and this weekend as well with college football, but Bink is going to give us the breakdown. Oh, I'm sure.
Are you ready for this weekend?
He was probably texting you about like the Cure Bowl and the Gasparilla Bowl.
He was texting me about the Division II championship. That's also on Saturday.
So yes, there was. I was like, what? Look, and props to Division II schools and everything like that. But just he texted me yesterday and I was something basically. He's like, yeah, it is. I heard you saying it's loaded slate. He's like, don't forget Saturday's D2 championship game. Crazy Saturday. I go, that's right. So Bink's going to join us at 12:30. We'll talk some Chiefs and we'll of course talk plenty of college football. And then it's a fan club Friday. We'll kick off this weekend the right way, heading into the holiday weekend for a lot of people. Kramer's going to stop by. It's been a bit since Kramer was on the show, so he'll join us. Yes, he's a Raiders fan, but he even understands, I think, now where his franchise sits. He just wants them to lose as well. So Kramer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour for a little fan club Friday. We'll have a couple drinks, and we'll end this thing out, of course, with our game predictions. But don't forget, you guys can hit us up. Probably have the number saved in your phone. If you don't by now, just save the 96.5 text line. Our friends at J Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965 in your phone. Appreciate all of you for listening. I know the morning show was time out as well. We appreciate all of you guys tweeting at us your Odyssey rap, which is showing some of you guys top 5% listeners, how many weeks and how many hours you guys listen to this station, which is just flat out awesome. And so we really do appreciate the support. It's pretty cool to see how many of you make us a part of your day, and we enjoy the interaction. We really, really do, and so appreciate you guys. Well, let's get into this thing, huh? Chiefs, Texans. I think this weekend, and of course, leading into Wednesday's game against the Steelers, can change a lot of the view for those of you on the fence. You tell me if I'm wrong. What I mean by that is, it's kind of crazy to ask the question, knowing that they're 13-1 right now. But is there anything that happens in the next two games that can cause those of you that maybe are still on the fence about a 13-1 football team to believe? And that's not saying there aren't flaws, as we've gone over this about the offensive line. It's my biggest concern, as I'm sure it is for a lot of you heading into this weekend and the postseason. But can we at least admit, if this football team can win on Saturday against Houston with, it looks like, Joe Tooney playing left tackle, at least for another week or another game, with Mahomes, who's going to play, but he's obviously not 100%, and then turn around and play the Steelers. If this team is able to win both of those games, short time frame and all things considered, shouldn't that put to rest some of your concern? Like, if this team gets to 15-1 by the time you wake up on Thursday morning, I guess it would be, and that means they would have locked up the number one seed in that scenario, too, because they would be winning two games here. They would have made it through the brutal stretch of the schedule that, you know, DeAndre Hopkins yesterday was talking about, the early bye week and the short weeks and all this kind of stuff. If they make it through that, it doesn't mean all the flaws are fixed, but what would you be all that concerned about? It'd be a win against a playoff team, a division winner against Houston. It'd be a win against maybe another division winner in Pittsburgh, depending on what they do Saturday, on the road. Like, the flaws are there, but it would be two wins in this hypothetical over playoff teams, including one that has surprised everybody that I think thinks they're going to at least win one playoff game. I'm talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's almost like the theme of the season, because you and Cody had gone back and forth with this. Cody just ran through the schedule, and you look at teams that are in the playoffs, who they'll have played. Like, they'll have played more playoff teams than the Buffalo Bills will have. And everybody's talking about the Bills like they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I think, you know, to your point, that's kind of just been like the story of the season. But it would hit its peak with these next 2 weeks, where you go through the stretch of the Panthers and the Raiders, and everyone's like, yeah, those teams stink and they're not good. The Broncos are good. Chargers are good. But you still had some games that were, quote unquote, easier. But you're going through this stretch now where to get to the one seed, you have to win these games. And if they do that to get to that position, it'll be really difficult for somebody, or impossible, really, for somebody, whether it be national or whoever, to say, this team has a lot of question marks and I don't think they can get it done, when they've shown us all, regardless of how ugly the game may look, they've been able to get it done all season long. Plus, if they do get the one seed, everybody's got to go to Arrowhead, so that makes it even tougher for everybody else. I just think that they've played their cards in a way that has been meticulous, and they found a way to get it done when they've needed to. But isn't that like the name of the game? Like, if they win the Super Bowl gold, but it's, I forget what scenario you gave last night, they're going to have a free kick to win the Super Bowl. Yeah. Nobody's going to care because they won the Super Bowl, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think we all agree on that point, where nobody cares how they win the Super Bowl, but there's just the stress that comes with the process of getting there. And that's what we've experienced and seen and heard from everybody here in Kansas City. I'm just asking the question that, If they get to 15-1 and lock up the one seed by Thursday morning, it's going to be awfully tough for you to convince me, I'm sorry, that, oh my God, they're just not good enough to win playoff games. They would have had two playoff wins, essentially, right? Essentially, the Texans are, as far as I'm concerned with what's at stake, it's like a playoff game. The Steelers is like a playoff game. All of that, plus, you know, the injuries that they're potentially having while winning those games. And on the flip side, you might be thinking, well, what happens if they lose those games? And that's, of course, a whole different conversation.
Sure.
Can they at least win one of the next two? That has to be the thought that, if you're even on a pessimistic side, can they split the next two to at least set up where they have an opportunity to get the one seed going in the Denver game? Of course, they cannot drop the next two, because I don't think Buffalo's losing another game, guys. I don't believe Buffalo. I know they have New England twice and the Jets. Crazy things happen in the NFL. It's never predicted like we all think it's going to be, but I don't believe Buffalo's losing another game, which means the Chiefs have to go 2-1.
Is there a game that you would rather them, I guess, if you knew they'd go 1-1, is there one that you'd rather them win in terms of like showing you, like if they beat the Texans, but then they lose to the Steelers, is it, not that it would change your mind, but if they go 1-1, does it make you feel any more comfortable, like, hey, they beat the Texans? Or would you rather say they beat the Steelers and they played well against that defense?
To me, tomorrow's the one you got to have. And the reason for that is I'm very, very concerned about Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. What the heck's the ankle feeling like for Mahomes then? I know this entire week after Monday, or after Tuesday when he spoke, I think everybody calmed down about their worry about Mahomes playing Saturday or not. If they handle business against the Texans, I don't want to say it's house money against the Steelers, but obviously the pressure is just way, way less if you're able to have that, knowing that you just need one win in the final two. I mean, it's just the simple math of the situation. You lose to the Texans, you got to win the next two, including a road game at Pittsburgh. So to me, tomorrow is the one you got to have. You're at home. It's at Arrowhead. It looks like, by all accounts, again, Mahomes is good to go. Hollywood Brown is going to be back for his first game. This is the game you got to handle your business on. And I look at the Texans, and we'll get to your text as well. The Texans, of course, their biggest challenge for Kansas City is their defensive front. They are second in the NFL with 45 sacks this year. They, in fact, are a sack away from tying their franchise record, which they set a year ago. So since D'Amico Ryans has gotten there, they've been unbelievable on defense. And we all know last year they burst onto the scene, and everybody thought they were about to take this next step this season, and that just simply hasn't happened for Houston. They won their division already. The AFC South is awful. They're pretty much locked into the four seed. They're going to host a playoff game, and maybe they're going to host Baltimore. Maybe they'll host Pittsburgh. It looks like it'll be whoever doesn't win the AFC North likely will end up going to Houston. depending on how the seating shifts around. But that'll be the biggest challenge. How do the Chiefs hold up against the front? It's why when we looked at the upcoming games, going back to even Cleveland, the stretch of defenses this football team is going to face. You know, you just got done with Myles Garrett, and now you're getting Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson, and then you're going to get T.J. Watt, of course, depending on his health, on Wednesday. So this O-line's being tested, and it appears that Joe Tooney will once again be left tackle for this week. But I still remain consistent on the offensive line situation. I believe DJ Humphreys needs one more opportunity at left tackle. It's not going to happen tomorrow. Maybe it happens against the Pittsburgh Steelers. One more opportunity for him, because I still think their best chance at winning these games, the final two after this one tomorrow down the stretch, and ultimately in the playoffs when it matters most, is with Humphreys at left tackle and with Tooney at left guard. And it's not to say Tooney didn't do a nice job in the first half against Cleveland. It's just he's a left guard for a reason. I think you get worse at left guard and you get average left tackle play when you move Tooney to left tackle. Now, average left tackle play is all they need from DJ Humphreys, but I want average left tackle play from Humphreys if he's healthy enough to play next week, and I want my all-pro playing left guard. That's when they're at their best, I believe, but they got to get the group together, and so far we haven't been able to see it other than more than three and a half quarters when DJ Humphreys got hurt in that Chargers game. But this game, to me, tomorrow is a defensive battle. Don't you guys agree? This is a Texans team. I just mentioned what they've done defensively. Fourth-ranked defense, number six against the pass. The Chiefs are the number five overall defense. We just saw Kansas City finally get all these takeaways. Now, I don't think they're going to suddenly just have turnover after turnover every single week. But this is a Chiefs defense that has put together now three games where they've allowed fewer than 20 points. And we all know 7 points against Cleveland. I think Spags has this defense moving now. Charles Domenihue, a big part of it. And for all the talk that we've had this week about, oh my gosh, how are the Chiefs going to handle Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson? And it's true. That's one of the biggest questions of the game. How about how is C.J. Stroud going to handle the Chiefs pass rush, which is starting to get going? Whether it's Domenihue, Karlaftis, who just had two sacks. Chris Jones, we always know, is a headache. Even if the sack number's not there, he's causing problems. This is from Fantasy Stats Hub. C.J. Stroud is 31st out of 32 qualifying quarterbacks this year in one of the metrics, DVOA, against the blitz. And we all know Spags likes the blitz. They haven't always been able to get home this year, but it's been better the last couple weeks because Charles Minihue is back in the fold. Last year, it's amazing how different. This is why the Texans aren't as dangerous, I think, as a year ago. Last year, C.J. Stroud was like a top five quarterback against the blitz. And we know he had a historical rookie record-setting season. It's like the polar opposite this year for him. A lot of it is they have a bad offensive line in Houston. But he was top five against the blitz last year. I just told you, he's 31st out of 32 quarterbacks that qualify. So there is something to be had there for the Chiefs defense. As much as we want to key in on how the Chiefs going to hold up offensively, I want to see, can the Texans hold up? I don't think they can. I think the Chiefs will get after C.J. Stroud tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that, you know, given how the last couple weeks have been, to your point with the offensive line struggles that they've had, you've got Charles Minihue coming in, and he's given new life to the defensive line. George Karlaftis has been much better. I wonder what the, not necessarily what the strategy is going to be, but would you dare, like, say Charles Minihue is having a day, or George Karlaftis is having a day, do you dare not double-team Chris Jones to try to address if the other guys are having impactful days? That's what makes them such a much better defensive line, is if you can not only have Chris Jones going, because you always know what you're going to get from him, but if George Karlaftis can get going, if Charles Domenihue is putting pressure on the quarterback, you're making the Texans have to make a decision on keeping an extra guy in the block, which leaves less weapons outside where your coverage can take advantage of it. Yeah, they could put themselves in a great position for success given the struggles that Houston has had and also the way that the defensive line has upped the ante over the last two games.
We'll talk more about this Texans team. We're going to go to Houston coming up around 11:30 or so today. We'll talk with somebody that does sports radio, our sister station, Sports Radio 610 down in Houston, get their perspective on what they see from the Chiefs, but more importantly, what's kind of gone wrong for the Texans this year after high hopes. Look, I had the Texans in an AFC title game against Kansas City. this season. I guess it could still happen, but that's how high I was on the Texans, like a lot of people. A lot of people thought C.J. Stroud was going to win MVP this year. That has just not been the case. It's not the same daunting Texans team. I believe they're kind of an average, slightly above average football team, one that's good enough to win in a division like the AFC South, but they're in that same category. I think when Cody and I were talking about this yesterday, I agreed, you know, the Chargers Broncos type of category. We'll talk about the Chargers Broncos game from last night and just how dangerous those teams are. Plus Drew continues, I think, to talk himself into a miracle happening with Cincinnati. We'll get to that in 15 minutes.
Hey, I'm
or so. Oh, you were feeling good today.
There's a better chance.
It went up from 5% to like 9%.
That's right.
Somebody had to lose last night. It's just the
right team lost, mm-hmm. I think.
So we'll get to last night, including the free kick that happened. But let's talk college football, because you alluded to it when I said Bink's going to join us later on in the show. I know you guys are fired up for it, and so am I. This is about to be an epic sports weekend. It's honestly perfect. Heading into a holiday week and all of this, we get the college football playoff. It all gets going tonight in South Bend. It's Indiana. It's Notre Dame. Looks like there's snow on the ground, and maybe going to snow during the game. I saw some videos this morning of, you know, cars basically lining up, you know, what we would normally see for an Arrowhead tailgate. That kind of thing's happening in South Bend. It's going to be a really cool scene. It's the first game of the new expanded college football playoff. It's the first time we're going to see an on-campus game of magnitude. So it's awesome. I'm very, very excited. Then, of course, tomorrow we get three college football playoff games, SMU and Penn State, Clemson and Texas, and then the big one Saturday night, Tennessee and Ohio State. I mean, Saturday is incredible. I hate that there's a little overlap because the Chiefs will play at noon, and at the same time you've got the Penn State SMU game, and so there's some overlap there, and there's been some articles written this week about how the NFL was trying to negotiate with college football, but they agreed to not have an NFL game on Saturday night. That way the Tennessee-Ohio State game is standalone. So there's some gamesmanship, if you will, or at least some discussions about how to kind of navigate that from both sides. But the game that I think most people are looking forward to is the Tennessee-Ohio State game tomorrow night. But tonight, I mean, if you believe in the underdog, if you believe in a school that's just usually not there, then you're pulling for Indiana tonight, right? But you and I were talking off air. I think both you and I have, in our bracket pool or whatever that everybody does, I'd have Notre Dame going on a run here. I have Notre Dame actually getting all the way to the national title game, so therefore winning tonight. But I wouldn't hate being wrong if it meant Indiana winning, because I will always root for a school that typically is never, ever in this kind of conversation to win a national championship in football. And Indiana definitely is the surprise of all surprises this year.
When Rob Collins and I were talking after he was done with Fesco and Dusty, and he goes, I hate Notre Dame. Everybody who's not, like, even though we picked Notre Dame, I think it would be kind of be nice to see Notre Dame lose again. I think
loss is that Northern Illinois game.
I know a lot of people are anti-Notre Dame, but in regards to how they've played this year, everybody wants to point that out. Notre Dame I think they're just better than Indiana. To your point, I also have Notre Dame going to the national title. We actually agree on not only the national title, but who's going to win the national title.
We don't agree very often, well. Drew, but we agree on this.
When it comes to college football, there's times that we are butting heads a little bit. But yes, we agree on that. I think that this one's really interesting. It could be really good, or it could also be very bad. Like Notre Dame could just put it on Indiana really bad. I think Tennessee, Ohio State's interesting, because that one, along with the Texas game in a way, the report is, there's a rumor out there that the game is in Columbus, mind you.
Yeah.
There is a rumor going around that a lot of the resale tickets have gone to Tennessee Vols fans, and they almost take over Ohio State. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
What does it hold, 100,000 at
about
the horseshoe?
About 100,000.
They're talking take like over? So you think there's going to be...
They're talking like 30 or 40K potentially in terms of Vol fans. That would be crazy.
I mean, I'll be stunned. You know how many... I think Tennessee could have 15,000.
There might be a lot of orange in there apparently.
There could be 15, and the orange will stand out when it's all red, and all of a sudden you have pockets of red or of orange. Maybe there's 15,000 Tennessee fans. You think there's going to be 40,000 Tennessee fans at Ohio State tomorrow night?
Based on what they've said, like the Tennessee Vols fans are going to show up, and they're going to show up in numbers. There's no I wouldn't be surprised.
That's embarrassing if that happens.
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a healthy batch of Tennessee fans. Well, Rob Brenton, the producer of The Drive, says he thinks it's rigged, or he thinks there's a boycott from Ohio State fans. They're not buying tickets because they want Ohio State to lose, because they want Ryan Day out. which I think is ludicrous because you're in the playoff. You have a shot to win the national title. Why? It doesn't matter whether you like the coach or not. You should want to win the game.
Sure. But I mean, that's embarrassing. I'll be the first to admit if I was wrong. I just don't think there's 40,000 Tennessee fans tomorrow night. That would be crazy, man. I know it doesn't sound like a ton compared to
60-40 split basically
at their home. This isn't a neutral site game. This is in Columbus, Ohio. I'm not buying it one bit. I'll tell you this though, that game, as great as I think it could be, the more intriguing thing for I think the casual fan is what happens with Ryan Day. Like, there's the side plot to this. You mentioned him in regards to their fan base, but what happens if they get upset at home by Tennessee? And what the latest spread on that one is Ohio State's a 7.5-point favorite at FanDuel right now against the Volunteers. If Ryan Day loses at home in the opening round of the college football playoff after just losing to Michigan, he's toast.
Gone.
But there was, I think, who was it? Was it Andy Staples, maybe, who covers college football? I think that's who it was this week. He was suggesting that Ohio State would never actually fire him. That would be one of those where, like, he ends up finding an opportunity somewhere else. And it's kind of one of those where, no, he just left on his own. Although, I don't know why you would do that. Make them pay you to make, you know what I mean? Like, make them pay you if they fire you.
You're at Ohio State.
But there's the ego, right? You don't want to say you got fired by Ohio State. So maybe that's what happens. But if he loses tonight, he's not coaching Ohio State next year, right? Isn't that pretty obvious?
I think if they win and then they lose to Oregon again, I think he's out. I think for him to save his job, he has to make the semifinal. In order for him to be the coach next year,
they would have to play Oregon if they won tomorrow night.
They'd have to beat Oregon.
And that's why Oregon...
I think he's gone.
That goes back to our conversation when the bracket first came out, which is that like Oregon's path is brutal compared to some of these other teams. The fact that, yes, they get the bye, and I will always take the bye. I don't care what anybody says in any sport. I'm always... Give me the fewest amount of games I have to play to win a title. That's why, I mean, the bye week in the NFL matters for health, but also, I only need to win two games to get to a Super Bowl. In the college football playoff, I only would have to win two games to get to the national title game versus three. I get the path matters, of course, but man, I'll always take the fewest games possible to go win a title.
Yeah, I think that to that point, especially if you're Ohio State, because Ohio State, for this year, I know they lost to Michigan. They've been, I think, the second best team in college football this year from a consistency basis. I know they haven't been ranked like that, but if you were to say before they played Michigan, if it were Ohio State and Georgia, I'm taking Ohio State. Ohio State's been that good. I get why fans are tired of them. I think even if they lose
to
Oregon.
He's one of the most unlikable coaches in all of college football.
Let's say they lose to Oregon and it's another close one. Oregon kicks a game-winning field goal. I still think he's gone.
I think if he doesn't win a title, he's gone, basically.
I think Ohio State fans want him. I think he has a shot if they make it to the semifinal. If they don't, he has no chance. I think he's gone. Which is weird because the same conversation almost came up with Jim Harbaugh, where for years he couldn't beat Ohio State, but he would go 10-2 every year. So theoretically, you think this guy's going 10-2 every year. Why would you fire him? But because he's losing to the rival. Ohio State is in the same boat. Ryan Day's record is incredible. But he hasn't beaten Michigan in the last, 3 years now? They've lost three games in a row now? But he's not an alum, so I think they had more patience Michigan did with Jim Harbaugh, where now Ohio State's been dominant in that rivalry for so long. If they don't make it to the semifinal, plus they lost to Michigan again, I think he's out, even though his record is so good.
Yeah, that's like the subplot of this entire college football playoff that I kind of love. Ryan Day is not a likable person, just plain and simple, at all. So, and you talk to any Ohio State fan, too. I see a few people texting, and they claim they're Buckeye fans as well. Someone just texted, as a matter of fact, said, we're so done with them as a Buckeyes fan, I fire Ryan Day, even if they win the national title as well. There's a lot of Buckeye fans that I think feel that way. But the same thing could be said in that SMU-Penn State game. While the story with SMU prior was just about what happens if they would have won versus lost, and ultimately they lost to Clemson, they still got in because they were competitive. If they would have got blown out, I still think the committee leaves SMU out. They didn't. Now SMU goes to Happy Valley, where tickets are like dirt cheap for that
game. $35 or $40 now to get in.
That's all it is. That's another head coach, James Franklin, that great record, can't win the big games either. He's one that's interesting to follow too.
If they lost to SMU, that might be something that actually spurs them to fire him. I don't think they do.
They're 8.5-point favorites against SMU.
I think Penn State get to the semifinal and will play Notre Dame.
I won't watch that game that much. That's going to be on an hour before the Chiefs game starts, so I'll watch that the first hour. But then it's going to be on a majority of the Chiefs game. So
of course,
hopefully,
right.
I mean, and there's a reason why they put the SMU-Penn State game in that time slot. It's not expected to be the best of the the opening weekend games that we're going to experience. We'll talk more college football throughout the show. Huge weekend. First college football playoff with the expanded field, the campus sites. Jay Binkley going to join us later on in the show to talk about it as well. Up next, though, let's get back into the NFL. The Chargers-Broncos. It was a great Thursday night game, including one thing that hasn't happened in, what, 70-some-odd years or 50-some-odd years. We'll get to that and how dangerous either of those teams could be. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll check in with Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor from ChiefsOnSI.com. Alex Gold, Drew Nixon with you today. So I was driving into work, and for like three lights, I would say, I was behind the same car, right? So driving in, I don't know, it's what, maybe 8:15-ish this morning or so. Heading in, Shawnee Mission Parkway, heading to a couple lights. And it's like a blue, I don't know, it was like a Ford Focus or something. And the first time I was like, what was that? And I saw it happen two other times. So anytime this car in front of me got at a stoplight, there was a woman driving and there was a male in the passenger seat. Every stoplight, I would see the male kind of lean over and with a spoon and feed what I assume to be his wife or girlfriend.
Okay.
I don't, was it oatmeal, yogurt? I'm not sure, but
something.
I legit started just like laugh. The first time I was like, what? And then it kept happening. And look, I don't know. Maybe, some of you maybe think, oh, that's cute or whatever. That's weird. That's weird, right? And you're married, Drew. You tell me, like, do you feed your wife while she's driving? It was just very, and I don't know, like, was he eating the oatmeal and then said, hey, you want some? And then but he was like feeding her like a child.
I think you would need more context to the story to fully understand it. But and traditionally, like, if I'm at a stoplight and we're eating in the car, we have food in the car, I'll take a bite. Normally, my wife is not going to feed me at a stoplight. if we're driving, like going home for Christmas, for example, stop at a spot to get some gas and then get some food as well. If we're going, like, I'm not going to have her hold like a sandwich up to me, but if I want to fry, like, hey, can you give me,
a fry or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. She might just like put the fry up and just put it in my mouth or whatever. Like that's
sure.
That's the extent
of it.
Spoon feeding me though. I don't know about the whole
like
spoon
the
feeding.
The fry,
thing,
yeah. though, you can just reach in the bag anyway and grab one. You have to be looking in the bag. Like, we've all done that. Like, you just reach in the bag and grab a fry while you're driving, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the yogurt, obviously, you're not eating. I think it was oatmeal or something. I
can understand it. I can understand where it's coming from, but I agree that you need more context of it. It's like, oh, yeah, I was just feeding him. Okay. Or I was just, hey, do you want a bite of this? Yeah, that. That I can understand a little bit more.
Like, were they running late to work? What was going on there? It was either yogurt or oatmeal. Someone says, Gold, you're just mad. You don't have someone feeding you while you drive. I'm good on that. Yeah.
From the 913 says, zero situation where my wife needs to place food into my mouth.
This is the theory. This is a good theory. 913-586-7965. Someone says, maybe she just got her teeth removed and was feeding her applesauce. Someone else says not weird at all. That's the first person that says it's not weird.
I think it's weird a little bit, but I can understand from the standpoint of, like, if we're driving on the road and, like, hey, can you open this for, like, if we're...
Well, sure.
Like, if we stop at a stoplight, I can open up my drink or whatever. If I got, like, a bottle of soda or a bottle of water. But if I'm driving on the... If I'm driving, like, hey, can you open this for me real quick? Like, I get that, and she's not pouring... My wife is not, as I'm driving, holding the bottle up to my mouth and pouring soda or whatever in my mouth. No, I just need it to be open, please.
Yeah, we've all been driving and you've been on a road trip and you have someone else in the car. And yeah, there's, like you said, there's a bottle that needs to be opened or something, you know, a Gatorade or whatever. And like you need to be open.
Someone
but this
said
is
she
different.
Doesn't have any hands. She's driving.
Okay.
She's driving.
Okay. Now, someone says at least she was being safe and not being distracted while eating, but getting fed by her boy toy. Look, she wasn't distracted. That's true. She waited till they got to a stoplight. It was just, I had not seen that before. And it was just funny to me and a little weird as I was driving in.
Somebody makes a good point. The spoon, you using a spoon to eat food in the car is already a little bit of an odd thing. I guess unless it's yogurt, it makes sense. But can you not wait to eat the yogurt until you like get to your destination? Someone said they've held dipping sauces for the wife, but never fed her the nugget. Exactly.
I'm just like, I'm still, the mystery here for me is if it was, let's say, oatmeal, Was he just actively eating it and then said, hey, you want some? Or was he holding it the whole time while she was driving?
You said it happened three times. So
three different times. Was he holding it the whole time in every stoplight he was feeding her? Or was it one of those, like, he's just eating and it's like, hey, honey, and here you go.
It would have only happened one time. It would have only happened once if it was just a, hey, do you want this? Three times, three different stoplights. He was definitely feeding her.
Anyway, I saw that this morning. So if you're listening and you drive a blue, what looked like Ford Focus or something, please let me know. I'm fascinated by it. But good for both of you. Good for both of you. Hope you guys have a good morning and good rest of the day as well. 913-586-7965. All right, last night was actually a really good Thursday night football game, and it involved two AFC West teams, the Chargers and the Broncos. By now, you guys know the Chargers won that game, and they have, what, a 97% chance now to make the postseason. If they win one of their final two, they're automatically in, and even if they weren't, they have some other scenarios they can get in. They're 9-6. The Broncos are also 9-6. And it was the Chargers team that came back. It looked like for a while there, the Broncos maybe were going to blow them out. It was an impressive start for Denver. The Chargers weren't doing a whole lot. Their defense was giving up plenty of yards through the air and on the ground. And credit the Chargers. In the second half, their defense buckled down and the Chargers get the win. There was also, for the first time since the 70s, a free kick, which was just kind of cool. I feel like it was weird. Like there was almost anticipation with it that we just normally don't get.
Yeah,
and Cam Dicker made it, and it was a Broncos error. That really changed the entire game. I know it sounds silly to talk about a free kick, but basically there was a punt, and there was not much time left on the clock. There was going to be 0 seconds, actually, but there was fair catch interference, 15-yard penalty, so the Chargers then got the ball in field goal range, and you're able to do an untimed down. If you fair catch it, you can do a drop kick or a free kick, and we don't see it happen because normally one teams will choose a Hail Mary or you're just not in field goal range and so on a penalty like that. So it was definitely something we haven't seen before. That's why you joked earlier about my tweet. I'm like, now we know how the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. Justin Reed's going to kick a free kick and the Chiefs are going to go three-peat. That's the scenario that's going to happen.
The Twitter would lose it. Harrison Butker gets a free kick. Everybody's throwing their hands up. Are you kidding me? Of course it has to end this way.
So, that was bizarre. I think, you know, the Denver Broncos are still going to make the postseason, but they have Cincinnati and they have Kansas City in that Week 18 game. I think if you're a Chiefs fan, you should have been hoping the Broncos would have won last night because then it would have made it far more likely that the Broncos would not need to play their starters Week 18. In the scenario that the Chiefs have to also win Week 18, you would, of course, like to be going up against Zach Wilson instead of Bo Nix. Now, if Denver hasn't clinched anything Week 18 and you need to clinch something Week 18, you're going to probably be playing their starters. That's why it would have been more preferable for the Broncos to have won that game. Watching both those teams, though, in terms of what could they do in the playoffs, I still don't think the Chargers are anywhere where they were 5 weeks ago. And the second half, Jesse Minter, their defensive coordinator, got them playing a lot better football. They've got some injuries. Justin Herbert was really good last night, again, even with a bad ankle. And one throw in particular that was pretty sensational. For those that kind of love to hate on Justin Herbert, that was a big-time performance from him last night. I still watch them without J.K. Dobbins, who maybe they get back before the playoffs. They don't seem as dangerous with Harbaugh. Like, can the Chargers, if they end up, and it looks like they're going to avoid the 7 seed now based off the win last night, they're the 6 seed. They would right now go to Pittsburgh. Can the Chargers go to Pittsburgh and win? It's far more likely than if you're the 7 seed Broncos, let's say, and you got to go to Buffalo. I don't see how the Chargers or the Broncos, whoever ends up being the 7 seed, is going to Buffalo and getting a win. Like I don't believe that's happening based off of what we saw recently and last night. That is not the same Chargers defense, and I think Bo Nix hasn't been playing quite as sharp as he was 3 weeks ago, basically. So neither of those teams to me are really a threat at all. What's interesting now is just how the playoff stuff ends up. And you came in with a little smile on you, a little smirk on your face. And for some reason, everybody's talking about this Cincinnati scenario like it's no big deal for them to get in. Like, oh, you know, here they go.
It is still very difficult.
Cincinnati still has to win 3 games. The Broncos have to lose
the next two.
And the Colts or Dolphins have to lose both have to lose one game. So, why is everybody acting like this is like some easy scenario? Your Cincinnati Bengals are not making the playoffs, buddy. They're not making the playoffs. I don't want you to be disappointed again.
Oh, okay. Look, I don't know if I can be any more disappointed than I have been. Like, look, if they barely miss it, fine. It'll be annoying that they don't get as good of a pick, I guess. But I've already been disappointed already with how the bad start was. I've already been through so much. Give us a little bit of hope here, you know? I do think it is interesting that there's so much that has to fall in place. It'll be really interesting to see what happens this weekend, though, with the Colts playing against the Titans. Mason Rudolph is playing. Cody is picking the Titans to win the game.
Okay.
San Francisco still fighting for a playoff spot, along with the Dolphins, of course. But San Francisco, you think if they can put it together, they're a better team than what Miami has shown. If they be, they might, they could come out of this weekend where that 9% chance now that it is all of a sudden like
15%.
15 or 20%, because if say the Colts and Dolphins lose, they're out. It's all of a sudden just between Denver and Cincy.
You shouldn't
they play
even,
each other next weekend.
You shouldn't even be worrying about it until it gets to week 18 and there's an actual scenario where they can win and the Chiefs are still trying to beat the Broncos. If it actually got to that point, then I can understand you have hope.
Yes.
The Broncos, the Bengals have 6 wins all year. So forgive me for not thinking that they're just automatically winning the next 3 games.
I think your point is very valid, obviously. I will say that, you know, on a week-to-week basis, things can change. Mm-hmm. And the way that you said the Denver's haven't been playing that great. If the Bengals take care of business this weekend and they beat the Browns, course they have to do that. But next weekend could be a massive game where Chiefs fans, mm-hmm. to your point, ironically, could be cheering for the Broncos to win that game.
Of course.
So that they're not in that position where they have to play all of the starters for Denver.
I mean,
I was
rooting for Denver last night.
Oh, yeah, right.
For the same reason.
Exactly.
For the same reason. Look, there is a funny scenario here that, considering everything we've discussed this football season, that admittedly would give me a lot of joy because it would also hurt your Bengals draft stock. Everything you need to happen happens until Chiefs and Broncos game. So your Bengals win the next 2 weeks.
They beat Denver.
They beat Denver, and it's week 18, and Cincinnati's up in their game that's also at noon. And the Dolphins and Colts have already lost a game the week before. And the Chiefs are playing for the 1 seed because maybe they drop one of the Steelers. And the Broncos also are playing for a playoff spot. The Chiefs don't need to play for a playoff spot that game.
And
the
lose.
Chiefs lose to Denver because they already have the 1 seed locked up. I'm sorry. And then Cincinnati comes that close. And it's the Chiefs that actually knocked the Bengals out.
What would make me more sick to my stomach, I'm going to be totally honest. If the Chiefs have to play their starters in the final week of the season, and so does Denver, and for some reason, amidst all of the starters playing for the Chiefs, Denver still wins that football game, I would be so frustrated because that's going to be the weirdest dichotomy of
the Colts have a better chance to make the playoffs than them, man. The Dolphins have a better chance even
with agreed.
This, like, there's
agreed.
That's what's funny. Like, and I heard even Amazon Prime's broadcast last night. I think it was Whitworth and Gonzalez and everybody up there, and they're talking like as if like something magically changed for Cincy last night. No. They have to win 3 games, and they need everybody else to lay an egg.
The easier path was opened up last night, because if the Broncos had won that game last night, they would have needed the Chargers to lose to Vegas, and then
Patriots.
Yeah, which that wasn't going to happen unless there was a serious meltdown. Plus, they needed the Colts and the Dolphins to lose again as well. So yeah, there's still a lot that has to get. So, we'll wait until we get by this weekend, and then we'll. My smile might be a little bit
that'd be funny
bigger,
if
it could also be
Dorian Thompson Robinson and the Browns just beat Cincinnati. Just end it this weekend.
That would really bother me,
Stop with the nonsense. All right, there was an email that I think a lot of us, we all get sent at the station. You know, I think Carrington gets on the same email list, and probably everybody at the station. We get these emails from offshore books, like a PR staff from these offshore books like Bovada, and they always have random odds, right? Like, who's the next head coach to be fired, or who's most likely to land on this team? And we got an email yesterday from Bovada about who's the favorite to trade for wide receiver Garrett Wilson in the offseason. Now, Garrett Wilson, for those that aren't familiar, he's very talented.
The
young
Jets Garrett Wilson.
Very talented young wide receiver for the New York Jets, Garrett Wilson, and they send the odds. The Chiefs are 3-1, the favorite to trade for him, according to them. Then Houston's 5-1, the Bears 5-1, Baltimore, Denver, and the Chargers are sitting at 6-1. One, I was pretty stunned to see the Chiefs were favorites. I get why on free agents on these odds the Chiefs are favorites a lot of times, because when you're defending champs and stuff, a lot of people assume players want to come sign with you, right? Makes sense. Trading for Garrett Wilson, only makes sense if you think two things are happening. Number one, somehow Garrett Wilson's value is way off. And he, at his age, which is not very old, and needing a new contract, somehow he only goes for like a second or third. Remember, the Chiefs, I don't believe, have a second round pick. If I know they have a first, they have a third, the LeJarius Sneed trade.
Yeah.
I don't believe you're getting Garrett Wilson for less than a first. So that's the first problem. The other part, which goes hand in hand, is you would need DJ Humphries to finally play a game again, look really good during the playoff run, and potentially lead them to a Super Bowl as their left tackle. The Chiefs then feel confident enough to sign him to another one-year deal in the offseason, so that left tackle is fine for next year, to where they wouldn't need to utilize that first-round pick on a left tackle. That's like the only scenario where you can talk me into it. Garrett Wilson's a really talented receiver, but you got to pay him also. He's at the point where he's going to be due a new extension. So next year, the wide receiver room, potentially, you'll bring back Rashee Rice. Now, he might miss the first 6 to 8 weeks. We'll see, due to suspension. We don't know. Xavier Worthy, of course, will be back. Could they bring Hollywood Brown back on a one-year deal? Let's see what he looks like. He hasn't even played a game yet.
D-Hop, maybe.
D-Hop, yeah. Maybe. He's getting older, though. But maybe he's an option on a one-year deal. There's other guys under contract. I don't know what the future holds for Sky Moore. We just kind of know where he's at this point in time, but he's technically under contract next year. So that they will need another wide receiver if they don't bring back a Hollywood Brown or a D-Hop. But to me, just use one of your draft picks at that point, or find another veteran to sign. I'm not a big fan of this at all, and it's not saying it's going to happen. It's just they're the favorite to land Garrett Wilson. Do you disagree with me on this? 913-586-7965, because I understand they will need to go find another wide receiver in the offseason just because of numbers. But they don't need to go give up a first-round pick and pay a wide receiver when they don't have their left tackle of the future potentially on the roster, unless you think Kingsley is going to develop. I think there's a chance in year three for Kingsley they could give him another opportunity. I don't know how they're going into next season thinking Kingsley's the left tackle.
Are we sure that the Jets don't want to do this because Garrett Wilson's Madden rating isn't too good for Woody
that's
Johnson?
That's a good point. Maybe the owner doesn't like it.
But no, I think you're right, because you have to look at what else you have potentially coming up. Like, obviously, you have Mahomes and all the contract stuff, but you're going to have to pay Trent McDuffie. And I think that they're going to do that. Rashee Rice is going to get a contract eventually. You're going to have to do that. Xavier Worthy, you just got him. He seems to be the goods, at least to be a number two wide receiver down the line. I don't think it makes any sense for the amount of money that you would have to pay a Garrett Wilson, along with, hey, do we pay George Karlaftis? Do we extend Charles Omenihu? We know we're going to pay Trent McDuffie. Like, all of these things that you have to talk about with money, and obviously I don't know the numbers, so I don't know how they could navigate it. They might be able to bring all of them back, for all I care, and get Garrett Wilson, but weighing the options, is that, to your point, the actual biggest need for this team? Would it be better for them, if they don't bring Omenihu back, to get another pass rusher, to get a left tackle to solidify that offensive line? Because in the end, you can say it doesn't matter who Patrick Mahomes is throwing to. As long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy, then he can throw to anybody. It doesn't have to be Garrett Wilson for them to win, as he's shown before.
And Garrett Wilson will be 25 next season. So
I think he's great, but I don't know if it's worth paying him knowing you have the other guys you got to pay for.
Some teams should. I just don't think it should be the Chiefs. Like, somebody will, because
Houston makes 20, some sense.
25-year-old wide receivers with what he's done and also not the best situation get paid. I mean, that's just how this thing goes. He's got right now a contract 4 years for 20. I mean, it's his rookie deal. He's going. It's
he
that time.
Like two more years left.
There's the club option, right, or the player option, or the team option, I should say.
Okay.
In 2026, but for guys like that, they don't play it out. Usually you get the deal done before. So whoever trades...
We also don't
know if he's getting traded. This is just...
Correct.
Bovada sent out an email with odds for Garrett Wilson's next team if it's not the Jets.
There haven't been any rumblings, right? There's been nothing other than this.
Other than the Jets being terrible and wondering whether they're going to have a new GM and they're going to have a new head coach next year, and who knows what their quarterback's going
to
be.
Why would they get rid of Garrett? To me, that wouldn't make... If there's one guy that you keep, like you keep Breece Hall and you keep Garrett Wilson, I think everybody else is up for grabs, I would say. But and maybe Quinnen Williams you don't get rid of either.
Someone on the text line says, if you had to guess, what do they base these odds off of? So sometimes with the offshore odds, there's definitely an angle of trying to get attention. That does happen sometimes with the offshore books for some of the crazier ones that are out there. Like when a coach vacancy happens and there's some bizarre names, it's usually to get people talking. I don't think that's what this is. But a lot of times if there's a free agent available or there's a potential trade, whoever the top teams are in the league at that time usually are at the top of the list. Like the thought is that team would either be a player away, if you're talking about like Buffalo or something like that, from going ahead and winning a title, or you're a player that's a free agent, like, oh, that of course that player would want to go play for the Chiefs, right? Because they win championships or whatever it may be. So that's why the Chiefs, and look, they will need another receiver next year. Just the numbers. I mean, we just went through it. You're going to have Rashee Rice back, but he might be gone for 6 or 8 weeks. You know, you'll have Worthy. There's two receivers. I mean, you don't have a ton of guys locked up long-term in the receiver room. It's Rice and Worthy. So to me, I would rather just draft a receiver in the third round or whatever it is, second round. I guess they do have a second round pick, right? You draft a receiver in a mid-round pick, and that first round pick needs to be used either to draft a left tackle, but I don't know if there is one to draft, or you do the Orlando Brown Jr. trade type of thing again, which was trade the first round pick to another team that has an existing left tackle that's a year away from getting paid and go that path. But that's why I brought up the DJ Humphries thing. You know, the DJ Humphries scenario, if he finally plays against Pittsburgh and looks good during the playoffs, that's a big if, then maybe that's a guy you can bring back for another 1 year deal in the offseason. And then you can say, all right, we've got another year to figure this thing out. We don't have to go trade for a tackle. That to me should be your hope as a Chiefs fan right now, is that for this year, yeah, Humphrey does it so they can win a Super Bowl, but that he's good enough and they're able to bring him back if he's good enough on a 1 year deal. And then you don't have to go spend another draft pick on a left tackle and you get another year to try to develop Kingsley behind them.
Well, and maybe to the DJ Humphries angle, if you know that you don't have to go and get a tackle, maybe instead of bringing in Garrett Wilson, you use that for you trade up and you get a Tyler Warren from Penn State if Kelsey is gone. Or you trade up and you get another wide. You trade up and you find a way maybe to get a Luther Burden if his stock is actually falling into the later part of the first round. Like using that for another player that you got more control over, who's younger, maybe not as great as Garrett Wilson, but somebody who in your offense can really fit that mold. It sounds like you would almost rather bring back. I'm going to use D-Hop in this example because okay. I think it's more realistic. If they bring back D-Hop, they draft a guy in the second or third round, and their wide receiver room then is. Let's say they use a first-round pick on a left tackle or they trade it for a left tackle, whatever. Their wide receiver room would then be Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, whatever pick they have, and DeAndre Hopkins, which I think people can live with, where you wouldn't have to play D-Hop 60%. Like whatever he's getting right now would be good enough next season.
D-Hop would probably be cheaper in this scenario. It, all this depends on the...
You should use him as a situation guy.
Cheaper between him and Hollywood Brown, I mean. It depends on the playoffs, I think. You know what? It's easy to say now, but let's say either guy, D-Hop or Hollywood Brown, let's say they have a great postseason, especially Hollywood Brown, because we just haven't seen. His first game is going to be tomorrow in a Chiefs uniform other than the preseason game. If he has a great postseason, they'll be, on one hand, you'll be like, man, got to bring him back. On the other hand, other teams will be like, okay.
How much do we have to pay him to?
Because the whole idea, remember when they signed him on a great 1 year deal was, all right, he's going to have a chance to have a massive season and he's going to go get paid. Whether it's in Kansas City or somewhere. Well, unfortunately, that plan didn't pan out. He suffers the injury in preseason, and we all know he doesn't play. So now, is he signing another one-year deal next year? I think some of it depends on the postseason. In a weird way, if Hollywood Brown is back next year, like the way he comes back is if he almost doesn't have a huge postseason. Like, if he's actually a big impact in the postseason, don't you think it's less likely he's actually back financially?
Between
the two receivers, I would rather have... I think Hollywood Brown back next year if he does what I think he can still do for this team. And that's more of an age thing. DeAndre Hopkins has been terrific, and thank goodness they traded for him. But he will be another year older by the time we get to next August and September. So interesting stuff. We'll talk about that maybe with Joshua Briscoe as well. Up next, we'll talk with our Chiefs contributor, Briscoe from Chiefs on SI. Get his perspective on Chiefs-Texans, what to expect out of that game. And an embargo was lifted today, Drew. An embargo for a documentary involving the Chiefs officially lifted. We can talk about it. That's next.